Enjoy all your favorite sports like never before at BetMGM. Signing up and playing is so easy. Simply sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. When you register with BetMGM, you can get instant access to a variety of parlay selection features, live betting options, and the best daily promotions in the business. And with BetMGM at your fingertips, every play and every game matter more than ever. Place your moneyline, prop, and parlay bets with the king of sportsbooks today. Sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets. If you don't win your first bet, that's right, up to $1,500. Again, sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. BetMGM and GameSense remind you to play responsibly. 21 plus and present in Ohio, subject to eligibility requirements. Rewards are non-withdrawable bonus bets that expire in 7 days. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER in partnership with MGM Northfield Park. That's 1-800-GAMBLER.
I'm Scott Weinberger, journalist and former deputy sheriff. In my new podcast series, Cold Blooded, I'm embedded in the cold case investigation into the death of firefighter Billy Halpern. Experience this investigation in a truly unique way, untangling secrets that may reveal the answers to not only one case, but almost a dozen. Listen to Cold Blooded, the Apollo Gym Murders on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Like the police knew who he was before they got here.
From iHeart Podcasts.
The medical school dean at USC was leading a secret double life.
He's breathing right now?
Yes, he's absolutely breathing. I'm a doctor, actually.
A story about money, power, and corruption.
When people fall in line, they fall in line.
Looking back, I realized, everyone knew.
I'm Paul Pringle, an investigative reporter for the LA Times. Listen to Fallen Angels, a story of California corruption on the iHeart Radio app, Apple Podcast, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Now here's a highlight from Coast to Coast AM on iHeartRadio.
Let's talk about your new work, ways to go beyond and why they work, and let's talk about these seven spiritual practices. Tell me about this.
Well, the reason I wrote the book is because, as you know, I'm a scientist, but I'm also a spiritual explorer, and there's now been quite a lot of scientific research on spiritual practices, and that research shows that spiritual practices in general make people happier, healthier, and live longer. The converse must also be true. People who don't have spiritual or religious practices are unhappier, unhealthier, and live shorter. So there's now good evidence that these practices have measurable effects on health, well-being, and in the short term, on things like brain function, blood pressure, and so forth. I wrote a previous book called Science and Spiritual Practices, where I dealt with seven different practices. And this book, Ways to Go Beyond, is a sequel, dealing with seven more. And the first one I discuss is something most people wouldn't think of as a spiritual practice at all, namely sports.
Sports, really? Okay.
Yes, because in the modern world, I think, although we think of sports as supremely secular, they're the main way in the modern world in which people achieve altered states of consciousness. If you think about meditation, which is a practice I discuss in my first book, Science and Spiritual Practices, if you think about meditation, the whole point of meditation is to come into the present. You know, normally our minds are wandering, worrying, thinking about all sorts of different things. The parts of the brain involved are called the default mode network. It's the chattering mind. And the point of meditation is to let go of those thoughts and then to come into the present by focusing on breathing or on a mantra. Well, in sports, people come into the present a lot quicker. I had a friend in the United States who was very busy in his work, and he told me that his mind was racing all the time. He couldn't sleep. He was thinking all the time. Tried meditating. Didn't work for him. But he was also a rock climber, a mountaineer, and he said by the time he was 50 feet up a rock face, he was totally in the present. It was all about where the next finger holds and footholds were. It was not about things to do with work. And if you're a football player in the middle of a match, you know, and someone's passing you the ball. You have to be completely present. It's no use sort of worrying about whether you paid a bill or something someone said to you or that upset you and that kind of thing. You've got to be totally present. If you're skiing downhill at 60 miles an hour, unless you're completely present, you might go over a cliff and you die.
That's right.
So I think one of the things that happens with sports, and one of the reasons they're so attractive to people, not just team games, but things like mountaineering, skiing, windsurfing, skydiving, and all those kinds of things, is that they bring people completely into the present. And then many people do have spiritual experiences in the context of sports. Michael Murphy, who founded the Esalen Institute in California, wrote a best-selling book called Golf in the Kingdom about the mystical side of golf, which has been a bestseller among golf players for years. So anyway, that in this chapter on the spiritual side of sports, I look at this aspect of sports, which is, I think, largely neglected and very little discussed, and yet enormously important to hundreds of millions of people who don't even think of it as spiritual themselves, usually, until they have an overwhelming spiritual experience and recognize, yes, well, this is a spiritual experience.
And that's one of the seven possibilities that you have of spiritual experiences. You also talk about fasting. Tell me about that.
Well, fasting is found in all religious traditions.
Yeah.
You know, in Christianity, it's practiced in Lent by many people. Sometimes it's reduced to giving up cookies or chocolate or something, or alcohol. But some people traditionally do fast completely, water fasts. You know, in Islam, they fast during Ramadan, during the daylight hours, no food or drink, not even water. There's fasts in Hinduism, there's fasts in Buddhism. In many shamanic societies, they fast before rites of passage or vision quests and so on. And of course, in the Judeo-Christian tradition, it's there in that the Jewish people fast on Yom Kippur. Jesus fasted 40 days in the desert after his baptism. So there's a long ancestry of this practice, but it's also been studied medically and scientifically. And it's now known that the best way to extend life in almost any animal, even a microbe like the bacterium E. coli, or a worm, or a fruit fly, or a mouse, or a human, the best way to extend life is to have periods of fasting. If you feed mice on alternate days, so every other day they're fasting, they live 50% longer than mice that are fed every day. And this is called caloric restriction of calories. And fasting, therefore, has this great health benefit. I mean, I'm not saying it's good for everyone. People who are on multiple medications, suffering from anorexia or diabetes or something, not advisable just to do this without some advice or supervision. But for most people, it's very helpful practice. And I myself do it every year during Lent, you know, in the period before Easter. I usually do it for 4 days or so in Holy Week, the week leading up to Easter. Just milk, water and tea, no food. And I find that it after the first day or two, I stop feeling hungry. Food still smells delicious, but I stop feeling hungry. It becomes much easier to do once you get into it. And I become clearer in my mind, more able to concentrate. It's better for prayer and meditation, which is one reason it's done in spiritual traditions. You have more vivid dreams. And it's psychoactive. When you're fasting, you're metabolizing fats. And the breakdown products of fats in the blood give a kind of slightly sweetish smell to the urine and the breath of fasting people. One of those compounds is the gamma-aminobutyric acid. beta hydroxybutyric acid. And that's very related to gamma hydroxybutyric acid, which is a neurotransmitter, GBH. It's also a street drug because it produces euphoria, and very closely related to the neurotransmitter gamma aminobutyric acid. And the levels of this compound go up in the blood automatically when you fast. They change the neurotransmitter levels, and they have these psychoactive effects. So there's a lot of research on fasting. The general effects are very good. They detoxify the body, and it also has the great advantage of being free. In fact, not only free, but you save money if you're fasting because you're not spending it on food. So this is a remarkably effective practice, and I think sadly neglected in the modern world. I think the health of people in America, Britain, and everywhere else would be greatly improved if most people had a short spell of fasting every year.
I think so.
And our religious traditions do indeed encourage that.
Well, Jesus did that, didn't he?
Yes, Jesus did it for 40 days, and you know, it was a common practice among Jewish prophets. So it has a long ancestry.
The meshing of science and spirituality, is that difficult or easy?
Well, it depends what kind of science you have. If you, as you know, the standard scientific worldview that's still orthodox in schools and universities is based on the philosophy of mechanistic materialism, the doctrine that nature is mechanical, matter's unconscious, evolution is purposeless, minds are nothing but brains. God doesn't exist out there, but at best as an idea inside human brains and therefore inside human heads, and with no objective existence. That's the standard materialist worldview, which is basically atheistic and is opposed to all religions and usually opposed to spiritual practices as well. Well, that does set up a conflict, of course, with religion and spiritual practices. But I myself think that this dogmatic materialism in science is something which is holding science back. It's not proven by science. It's simply a belief system or set of assumptions, which I deal with. I discuss them in detail in my book, Science Set Free, where I take the 10 dogmas of science and turn them into questions and show that actually things are much, much more interesting if we question these dogmas. They open up new possibilities for discovery. For example, the idea that nature is mechanical, machine-like, is not something proved by science. It's simply a metaphor. Originally in the 17th century, people thought the universe was like clockwork because you could make clockwork models of the way the moon moved around the Earth. But now we know the universe began in the Big Bang, and it's been growing ever since and forming new structures within it as it develops. It's much more like a developing organism. The Earth, Gaia, is much more like a living organism than like a misty ball of rock hurtling around the sun just simply according to mathematical laws. I mean, it does do that, but it's much more than just an inanimate object. So I think that when you have a view of nature as alive, organic, with our own minds as more extended than our brains, the kind of scientific worldview that I've been trying to develop through my own books and which many other people are developing too, then the conflict with spirituality and religion sort of melts away. And the fact that scientists are now studying spiritual and religious practices and finding that they have these measurable effects and many benefits, I think more or less dissolves this ideological conflict that used to exist into something much more collaborative. A scientific study of fasting and its effects on health and mental life and well-being is not in conflict with the practice of fasting, and the practice of fasting is part of religious traditions, as we've just discussed. So there's no conflict there, and the science can actually illuminate the practice of fasting in a helpful way for those who fast.
And Where does prayer fit into this, Rupert?
Well, that's one of the spiritual practices I discuss in my book. And all these are practices I do myself. I mean, the one reason I've written the book is that, you know, they're personal experiences for me, not just theoretical exercises, these discussions. Prayer does require one to have a belief system that goes beyond atheistic materialism, because prayer involves invoking a higher being than oneself. All prayers begin with an invocation, "Our Father who art in heaven." You know, it's an invocation to God the Father. "Come Holy Spirit" is an invocation to the Holy Spirit, an aspect of the Holy Trinity, as Christians conceive of God as a Holy Trinity. "Hail Mary, full of grace," used by many Catholics and some Anglicans, is invoking the power of Mary. And in all religions, people start by invoking the God or the form of God or the being to whom they're praying, the saint or the ancestor or whoever. And so the first step is to connect with a spiritual being. And then in petitionary prayer, where you're asking for something, to direct attention to the things you're concerned about, you know, problems in the world, the sickness of someone you know, problems in your own life. Most prayers are about very practical things, prayers for defense, protection, healing, good fortune, protection from enemies, passing exams, success in business, and so on. These are the kinds of things people pray about. They're things to do with ordinary life. And for many people, this is very helpful. It is for me. And people who pray, again, there's lots of evidence that shows people who pray regularly live longer and generally speaking.
Listen to more Coast to Coast AM every weeknight at 1 a.m. Eastern. And go to coasttocoastam.com for more.
There's a lot of pros to drinking Health Aid kombucha. No cons that I can think of. Pro, amazing taste. Pro, pairs well with anything. Pro, probiotic. That's a literal pro. And it's deliciously refreshing. It's the perfect pairing to your meal or great on its own, whether you're having Pink Lady Apple, Berry Lemonade, or one of the other great flavors. It's the perfect swap for soda or alcohol. Make it part of your daily routine. Look for the brown bottle with an anchor on it and try Health Aid Kombucha today.
Okay, round two. Name something that's not boring.
A laundry? Ooh, a book club. Computer solitaire, huh?
Ah, oh, sorry. We were looking for Chumba Casino. That's right. Chumbacasino.com has over 100 casino-style games. Join today and play for free for your chance to redeem some serious prizes. Chumbacasino.com. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
I'm Scott Weinberger, journalist and former deputy sheriff. In my new podcast series, Cold-Blooded, I'm embedded in the cold case investigation into the death of firefighter Billy Halpern. Experience this investigation in a truly unique way, untangling secrets that may reveal the answers to not only one case, but almost a dozen. Listen to Cold-Blooded, the Apollo Gym Murders on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.